Good evening. This is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My returning, after a long time, guest tonight is poet Kelly Russell Agadon. She is the co-founder of Two Sylvias Press and teaches at Pacific Lutheran University's low residency MFA program, the Rainer Writing Workshop. Her new collection is Accidental Devotions. Kelly, welcome to the show. It's a real pleasure to talk to you. We haven't talked in a long time.
No, it's been a while.
Now,
so thanks for having me, Mark.
Oh, it's a pleasure. And the book is, not only is it great to read, the cover artwork is spectacular.
Thank you. That was a hard choice. She's a Filipina artist, self-taught, who lives in Texas, and I was lucky enough to get her work.
It fits perfectly to the body. Yeah. Talk to me about the word.
Bottom of my Ronquillo.
Talk to me about the word devotions, because that seems like a very loaded word.
It is a loaded word. I mean, I think Mary Oliver had a book called Devotions, and I started realizing that I was devoting my life to things that maybe I wasn't devoted to. That's why it's an accidental devotion, such as like my iPhone or too much screen time.
That's a theme in a number of these poems is contemporary interaction with iPhones, Alexa, mm-hmm. and so on and so forth. What has that been like for you? For me, it's been sort of baffling to watch that happen, to how devoted to their iPhone people are, who are walking down the street not looking where they're going. I sound like a bad comedian, but it is true, and it's affecting the way people deal with other people.
It's right. It's, you know, we can be in our own little world. And I mean, I've seen a video of a man walking down the street with a black bear next to him looking at his iPhone, not even noticing. So it does take us out of the world.
And the bear was on its phone. And that's why they didn't notice
the bear
each other.
Was also texting, so it wasn't a problem. They both just went their separate ways.
I think one of the funniest poems, and a lot of these poems are very serious. I want to say that for the audience. But one of the funniest poems in this is Alexa, why am I falling apart?
That's right.
Have you actually ever done that, to ask Alexa that question?
Yeah, that's how the poem began.
You really did that? Oh my God.
I wanted to see what she or he or it would say if I asked it that. Sometimes I shouldn't have a dysfunctional relationship with Alexa, but I do. And I actually don't like that I have an Alexa, but my sister gave me one for Christmas.
Oh, you can't get rid of it now.
Once you have it and you start putting your grocery list on it and it plays music, it becomes, I don't know, but it's strange to have this little device that you're talking to. So I thought, well, what if I asked it, why am I falling apart? I was having a bad day, and see what it had to say.
And what did it say?
It said...
Is it the poem? Is the stuff that's in the poem?
No, I started asking it about different things of falling apart to find the different ways that it might answer me. And then I let my imagination run wild. But it said something like, I'm not sure what... You know how it kind of just like, I'm not sure what you're asking me right now.
Right.
I'm sorry. I'm not getting that. It was very apologetic that it could not help me with my falling apart.
And it doesn't, and the voice sounds weirdly smug.
Yes. Yeah. And my Alexa in the book gets like snarkier by the end.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. She's not really helping anymore.
These poems, are a lot of them the things that occur to you once you reach a certain age that you really are starting to consider who you are and what you're doing?
You know, what's interesting is my second book, which I wrote in grad school, was called Letters from the Emily Dickinson Room. And it deals a lot with the same kind of, you know, spirituality of and trying to find meaning in the world. Back then it was a younger self, and now it's still that older self, still looking at those questions, especially in this environment, like what am I doing in the world right now? But now we have all these strange devices that continue to distract us from, you know, perhaps meaning or perhaps something greater or even just being present. And for me, that's something I noticed in my life and really didn't like so much.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I'll go on my phone, but I have to catch myself every once in a while when I start doom scrolling. And
absolutely.
But it is, it's right. A thing that's between you and the outside world. It's strange because when I go to different places looking at birds and butterflies and stuff like that, if you're in a popular place, you'll see everybody's recording it through their phone. So they're not actually watching it.
Right.
They're seeing it through the phone as a filter, and then they'll enjoy it later.
But they won't enjoy it later. How many of those things do you tape on your phone that you go back to watch? I'm constantly taping my cats. And I'm not going back to watch them tussle in a couple weeks. I mean, it's happening in real time on my floor every day. But it's a weird, and I'm trying to get away from that right now in my life. I'm really trying to be present. I saw this a photo, and it was from 2022, and it was this whole group of people watching Tiger Woods, and everyone was watching them with their phones up.
Isn't that weird?
One guy that was holding a beer. Yeah, he was holding like a Michelob Light. And I thought, you know, I don't like beer, but I want to be the guy with the beer. I want to be the one who's just present, who's not recording or feeling that we need to document everything, because I think how many things I take a video of and I never look at again. It just clogs up my phone.
Well, also, it gives you the illusion that your life is important or more important than you think it is. Like,
right, we're many.
I don't really care about everybody's meal. I mean, that's one of those things. I can get into cats because I love cats, but but you know, there's so many interesting things that go on in your poems. Every poem you write is a devotion, and this is under the poem, I think, Necessary Prayer.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to me about that. Like, when you write, mm-hmm. you're writing it as a devotion.
I don't know if I'm thinking that when I do it, but poetry really is kind of a devotion for me. And Necessary Prayer it's a gift to the reader. It's a sonnet, and it comes after an image also from the artist mm-hmm. of Elizabeth Barrett Browning's poem, How Do I Love Thee? It's a hand. And then you turn the page and you get this necessary prayer, which is actually perforated. You can take this poem out and let it go out into the world, or put it above your desk, or, you know, roll it up in a ball and throw it to your cats, whatever you want to do with it. But it was kind of my gift to the reader. And I think when I was writing this one really felt like a prayer to me, which is how I think it ended up kind of in the sonnet form, because mm-hmm. I can kind of romanticize that form a little bit. That really feels prayer-like to me. But when I'm writing, I guess the act of writing to me is devotional or devotion. But I don't know if I'm necessarily thinking that when I jump into it. Mostly I'm just playing around. I love to play in poems.
Well, talk to me about the writing process for you. For every poet, it's different. Do you have a certain time of the day that you write? Are you picking up snippets of conversation? There's an interesting section in this book, which is sort of annotations to all the different poems. And I found that really fascinating to read about your work. It seems like you would pick up a phrase or pick up or see something, and then that would prompt you to write the poem.
Yeah, that happens a lot. So kind of even that accidental poems, I get a lot from the world around me. And so when I write, what I like to do is wake up in the morning, get a nice hot cup of coffee, sit down, and read poetry first. So I always keep a book of poems where I sit on the couch. And so I'll go through and read, and then I just open up my laptop, I put on headphones, and I put music on, which is different for some people. My music has lyrics, but it creates kind of a muscle memory and kind of sets the mood, and then I just start writing and see what comes out. And a lot of times, you know, I write something and it's not so great, but it's still something more than I had. And if I like it, I'll put a little GP when I save it to my file, which means good poem, so I can go back and revise it. But it's more of a writing practice. I'm not attached to outcome. I'm not thinking this has to be a poem. It just And I will grab from like snippets of conversation from the day before, or maybe something I've read might spark something in my poem. And that's just how I do it.
Is it important to develop a practice for writing poetry?
Yes and no. I mean, because I'm also somebody, because I'm a paddleboarder and I live in the Pacific Northwest, that our summers are really special here. Like, I just want to be outside. So a lot of times in the summer, I don't write. So I've gotten into the practice of writing every morning. And I think, you know, kind of getting off of social media less and not being on there and really making mindful choices not to always be on my phone, I'm using that time in the morning to write. But I think it can be useful, especially if you give yourself a little goal. Like, I'll say, okay, I'm going to write a poem a day for National Poetry Month. I'm going to write a poem a day starting in January and see how far I can go. And that I find is a good practice. But also, when you do it, just don't be attached to that outcome. Like, believe that everything, because I would say people probably don't read 98% of the things I write. They just sit in my little folder alone.
I also think it's really easy to write bad poetry. I think that's the easiest thing in the world. It's really hard to craft a good poem.
Yeah. You know, it's a fun practice is to try to write a bad poem, and usually they turn out pretty good because what our mind thinks is a bad poem. You start getting really creative.
I've got to do that. First of all, I can't write poetry. I know I can't. That's not the art that I'm involved in, but I can see that. And it's interesting with you. You were talking about the perforated poem and mm-hmm. getting it out into the world, which sort of slides into performance art at that point. That your Devotion to Lovers poem in Minor Notes, Devotion to Lovers in Minor Notes, that was commissioned by the Skagit Valley Symphony and performed.
That's right.
Talk to me about that experience.
Right. That was a really interesting, you know, being commissioned to write a poem immediately makes things a little harder because you have to do it.
Oh, I totally get that. It's like the pressure's on.
Right. And so I knew I had to write a poem. So I started listening to all of what the symphony was going to play and learning about it. And that was a really, I felt like we were getting down to the, you know, the very ends of it. But listening to the music was, you know, another way to bring myself into the poem. And then I just really tried to let the poem speak. So yes, that was, commission work is always harder, but I was thrilled that it turned out, you know, I felt really good about it. Because sometimes when you are commissioned something, you write it, but you might feel, and also perhaps because you know the pain and of having to like meld something into what is wanted as opposed to what you might want.
Oh, yeah.
It'd be different. Yeah. So I felt this one actually worked with what I wanted and what they wanted, and they were thrilled with it. So that made me very excited.
How was it used? I mean, did they perform the music and then that was passed out? Did somebody read it or what?
I read it. I went out on stage. I walked between the orchestra. And it was the start of the performance. And then, so once the audience had the poem to kind of inform them, they then got to hear the whole symphony. And it was amazing. Yeah.
That's incredible. Well, you
it was a great experience.
Have you ever done anything that formal before? I'm sure you've done readings, but that's a different level.
No, that was actually walking out in heels and kind of a faux leather dress.
Oh,
and,
wow.
in the lights on you, and it's very, very different than my normal life, you know, in the garden. And all I said was just, please don't let me trip, you know. Okay. I think a beta blocker would have been great at that event because I don't normally get nervous, but this time I was.
You're listening to WISN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. I'm Mark Lynch. My returning guest after a long time is poet Kelly Russell Agadon. She is the co-founder of Two Sylvias Press and teaches at Pacific Lutheran University's Low Residency MFA program, the Rainier Writing Workshop. And we're talking about her new collection, which is Dynamite, Accidental Devotions. Kelly, would you like to read a poem?
I would love to read one. I thought I would start with Young Sirens. That's the second poem in the book.
Yeah,
and it also brings in kind of the online world, and it was inspired by something I had read on Twitter, which is now X, but at the time it was Twitter. So you will hear that as the second line. It's called Young Sirens. Twitter. If you had a mermaid phase as a kid, you're probably bisexual now. How did I not understand when I swam with my ankles crossed to make a fin, or when I asked my friend to touch my arm, my skin? She wrote, "Love you, XO," on my rib cage in black pen. All summer, we hid in my family's camper behind the daisy curtains, and it wasn't a sin when she put her lips on mine and said, "I'm new to this, I'm all in." All summer, we kept finding more reasons to wear less. Together, we walked into the salt water, hand in hand, said we'd be better with fins. All summer, we sang to each other, our bodies a single tide. And when the boys who were cruel to starfish slipped in our waters, we hissed, said, "Only mermaids deserve this." And our parents couldn't see us because we were a friendship amid shells. How we held each other in front of everyone, and no one ever guessed.
I love that poem. I really do.
Thank you.
And it's so wonderfully sort of elicits that time, that age that you're at when you're figuring things out.
Right, right. And it really explores like girl friendships if you're having a relationship with another girl, it's just nobody thinks anything of it when, you know, girls are hugging each other.
Yeah, but
so you're kind of under the radar.
But I like the fact that mermaids are symbols of bisexuality.
Yeah, well, because
that's right. It sort of makes sense to me because it's water and land, it's fish and person. That was an amazing symbol. I never would have thought of that. That figures you coming to terms with sexuality and sensuality and romance. That figures in a lot of these poems too. And I just wonder, do we ever figure that out?
No, I don't think we do. This book, I really allowed myself to, you know, dive deeper into that. I felt like this is probably one of my most hopeful books. It definitely still has the death and grief and anxiety. That's my signature trademark.
But there's more.
But humor and desire. And it was funny because some of these poems were written during the pandemic, and we were kind of under quarantine, and my friends were writing all these quarantine poems, and I'm writing about being at a party in the 1920s, you know, with surrealist poets and artists. And so my mind was writing all these desire poems, you know, and other people were writing about, you know, feeling alone. So I think my imagination was trying to fill in some gaps there.
I think it was a survival element to it too.
Absolutely.
What's amazing is how many people, authors that I interview in the last year, all of their project, all the ideas for what the book started during the pandemic. The pandemic was a tremendous prompt to an awful lot of people, scientists, historians, artists, poets. It's incredible. In the end, it was sort of a good thing.
Well, I was thrilled because I had overbooked my spring. So when said we were under lockdown and I had to take all these things off my calendar, I thought, did I just manifest calmness?
I know there's nothing like having all your stuff canceled and it's not your fault. And there's this big sigh of relief, like, whoosh.
Oh, I was like, I just got out of a lot of things that I said yes to that I didn't want to do.
It's like a snow day in school.
Yeah, snow day for adults.
Oh, my God. I can really identify with that. I love whenever I read a poet like yourself, I'm always interested to the kinds of things that they cite. Tegan and Sara. Here's the weird part. When I read that was on my phonograph. Well, on my CD player.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I've listened to them for a long time.
That's a niche. Like that. I was just talking to another poet yesterday about pop references in my poems.
Yeah.
She had asked, like, do you write them so people get them? I'm like, there's so many niche things in here where you have to be either of a certain age or know a certain thing. And that's one of the more niche ones where a lot of people don't know them.
I know, and that's too bad because they're incredible.
They're good.
They're really good. But something bad happened to them. I forget what it was. And they ended up having, was it somebody stole their work or something? I can't remember.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Something bad happened to them. I forget what it was. And they had a bad experience, and I forget. We'll have to talk about it some other time. But talking about niche things, insert Starlight.
Yes.
What's this unplayable waltz by the composer John Stump? Now, that was niche.
Yes, that is a total niche. So if I tried to do kind of this poem after it, but if anyone wants to Google him, the unplayable waltz, by John Stump. It's this absolutely insane waltz that is unplayable. It's got notes. It's got very strange specifics for the people who are playing the waltz to do. So like in my poem, it says light explosives now and now. There's strange little comments throughout this waltz for the performers, and it's supposed to be unplayable. And I don't know how I stumbled upon that. I did. And it inspired, you know, the Insert Starlight poem, which is basically me giving a bunch of, you know, just random things for the reader.
That's what I mean. I get a different reaction from reading your poems in that there's a sense that you as the poet are doing interesting connections with the reader. That's different. I'm not just reading your poetry. I'm interacting with it.
Oh, thank you. I do hope it's interactive. Like, you know, you can rip out the last poem like we just talked about, but to learn more. And it is something I do think about the reader a lot, especially when I'm at that final putting the poem together, is that I do like those, you know, little Easter eggs in here. Like in the first poem, there's a called Advice. There's a line where I say, when in doubt, add plums to your poem.
I laughed out loud with that.
Yeah, it just seemed like, you know, people would be thinking of William Carlos Williams. So I made sure that there were like six or seven plums in this book because I thought, well, that's kind of funny. What if I followed my own advice?
On the more serious tip about your Easter eggs, in one of your poems, the reference is the tree struck by lightning in Salem. And the graveyard with the graves of the judges in the 1692 Salem witch trials. That's grim, man.
Yeah, I'm glad you caught that. That's that was kind of added in towards the end when I started to realize, when I was revising the poems, I realized a few poems, two poems before that, I have Accidental Devotion to Poets with Smoldering Wings, where I say, dear ones, I must know, witch or angel, either all women can fly. So I wanted to then bring in kind of the Salem witch cemetery.
Yeah.
So I did some research there. That's on the other side of the country from me.
Yes. Rebel angels is a idea. Talk to me about what you think about when you talk about rebel angels.
Rebel angels for me is like very feminine. It's kind of what I feel. I think in this poem, I'm really speaking, in a few poems, I'm speaking directly to women, but it's this idea of angels, or that idea of kind of good and bad. But I love the idea of a rebel, and I love the idea of an angel, and also just those two words together. They sound nice, and they both end in an E-L. So I love the idea that there can be an angel, but maybe it's not perfect, and maybe it's kind of, you know, doing its own thing, you know, smoking a cigarette, having a martini, but also being good in the world. So I like the and if of everything. And so I do like accidental devotions is kind of an oxymoron or contradictory. Rebel angels are two words you wouldn't expect together. So I love to put words together to see kind of what energy comes from words that you wouldn't, you may not associate with an angel. You might not think, hey, rebel, you know.
It's one of those phrases in your book that, again, captured my imagination because I started to imagine all sorts of things about rebel angels.
Did you imagine them in like leather jackets? Or what?
Yeah, I actually imagined them as a motorcycle club.
Yes.
With the leather and everything else, but they were angels, but they were rebel angels. Yeah, it would be a women's motorcycle group.
It would be a perfect name.
Yeah. It's like, when did you first read Emily Dickinson?
I probably did not. I went to a public school, and when I took a poetry class, I was taught by an ex-DJ. So we actually looked at Pink Floyd lyrics. So I was highly disappointed.
So
it probably wasn't until college. I mean, I might have like stumbled upon a little bit of Dickinson, but I don't think I really read her until college. And then, you know, I named my first cat Emily, and then it just went from there.
I love Emily Dickinson's poetry, but I also love the fact that she did weird things with the poems like you did. She did a lot of visual things with them, and she's like a performance artist too. We're completely out of time. And I just began to talk about the book. My returning guest tonight is poet Kelly Russell Agadon. She is the co-founder of Two Sylvias Press and teaches at Pacific Lutheran University's low residency MFA program, the Rainier Writing Workshop. But we've been talking about her collection, which I just enjoyed it so much, Accidental Devotions. Kelly, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much, Mark. This was just a joy.
You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. Good night.